Welcome to the ESEC Anthropological Podcast, where we delve into the captivating world of anthropological research. In today's episode, we're excited to introduce Caroline van Wijs, an ardent anthropologist whose academic journey commenced at ESEC in Zurich. Caroline's academic journey began with a bachelor's degree in social anthropology at ESEC, followed by a master's degree. Throughout her tenure, she actively participated in the Institute's activities, contributing as a crucial member of the Fachverein. Moreover, she graciously served as a tutor, offering invaluable guidance to her peers, myself included, in structuring and finding their research projects. Her profound and lasting impact on both the faculty and her fellow students is palpable and will be greatly missed. However, Caroline has graciously returned to share insights from her master thesis. Her journey led her to Malawi, where she immersed herself in the local culture for 3 months. During this time, she grappled with questions surrounding the collection of early childhood development data using wearable technologies. Her primary research question delved into the functionality of such research studies, the underlying assumptions driving them, and the myriad factors shaping their trajectory. In this episode, Caroline shares 3 insightful vignettes from her research journey. The first one, Setting the Scene, delves into the contextual backdrop of Caroline's research in Malawi. She reflects on her positionality as a white European anthropologist and the inherent power imbalances present in conducting research in such settings. Caroline also addresses the privilege afforded to NGOs in collecting data in these communities, particularly in medical research. Moving on to the second vignette, Caroline explores the challenges encountered during data collection, including technological glitches and unforeseen difficulties. Lastly, in the vignette titled Proximity Sensors, Caroline delves into the analysis of the accumulated data. She questions whether the data collection truly aligns with the researcher's assumptions and narratives, or if there are deeper underlying stories yet to be uncovered. Join us as we embark on a journey of discovery with Caroline, unraveling the complexities of anthropological research and the critical thinking that accompanies anthropological work.
It is a hot Friday afternoon at the end of October when I observe Tadala preparing measurements on a 5-year-old girl. We pass through the girl's family's house into the backyard, seeing that there is less commotion than in front of the house, where another data enumerator is performing measurements with the girl's twin sister. Tadala explained that a quiet place is needed for the measurement, as it can influence the results and hinder the collection of good quality data. It is, however, not easy to find such a spot in a rural village where everything is quite close together and always noisy. We sit down on a small step in the shadow and Tadella starts preparing the EEG recording on her tablet. She selects different settings and inserts the girl's information on the app used to record the measurement. The child is already wearing the headband that will record the EEG. Tadala put it on a few minutes before in front of the mother and the second child. She had used a baby wipe to clean the spots on the head of the girl where the electrodes would be positioned to measure the electrical signals of the brain before placing the headband on. To make sure that the headband stays in place, she secured it with a white bandage around her head and chin, making it look like as if the girl has a head injury. As soon as the app is configured, the enumerator asks the girl to close her eyes so she can start the recording. The young girl sits calmly with her eyes closed while Tadala struggles with the tablet and the headband as they seem disconnected. To fix it, she takes the headband off again, presses a small button, then places it back on the head and checks if it is secured correctly. Finally, it connects to the tablet and she starts the recording. We sit in silence. The enumerator is focused on her tablet, checking if everything's going to plan by looking at the graphs on the screen. We have been sitting here for a while now. It seems far longer than the planned 5 minutes, and the girl is getting restless. Suddenly a goat is squeezing itself through the grass fence, making its way through the backyard into the house, exploring what there is to eat and stepping on different things lying around before heading inside the house. Another family member comes through the house and chases the goat away. But instead of going out the front door, it runs out through the back while stepping on pots and plates on the ground, making a lot of noise before squeezing itself back through the fence. Other women and children in the neighborhood can be heard shouting in the background throughout the measurement. Tadala looks at me with a defeated look, and the whole situation seems absurd to me. Finally, the recording is done. She tells me it lasted 20 minutes instead of 5, as the app froze. Yet, according to the graph on the screen, she thought that the measurement was probably good enough. Setting the scene. It is around 2 in the afternoon, and it is hot. The temperature currently rises to 36 degrees every day, and it will only start to cool down with the rainy season still a few weeks away. We finished lunch a while ago and rested on the veranda afterwards. I ask Madalitsa if she is ready to conduct some of the last interviews in the village. We try to go in the morning, but at this time of the year, people are usually working in their fields for a few hours in the morning and are thus not home. She grabs a notebook that I gave her so she could write down the translated questions in Chichewa, puts on her beanie, grabs her nearly 2-year-old son and ties him on her back with a chitenje, a typical wrap fabric worn in the village, which is also used to tie things around one's back, and is ready. Her daughter, soon to be 5 years old, sometimes joins us or goes to her grandmother's and aunt's place to play with her cousins or remains in the area where her family and me currently live to play with the children there. I am equipped with my hat, my water bottle, my notebook and a sheet of questions and my phone. Madalitsa takes a look at the list of names in my notebook, checks which families we have not talked to yet. This way, she says, and lifts her arm in a direction. We walk there more or less in silence. The families usually do not live too far, probably around 5 to 10 minutes. People greet us on the way and find it funny when I answer in Chichewa. We arrive at the house and Madalitsa shouts Odi, a verbal way to knock on the door, as there is no one on the veranda around the house. A woman comes out, greets us and grabs a mat made from reed so that we can all sit on it. I ask Madalitsa to introduce myself and to ask if she's willing to talk to me about the study. She introduces both of us, even though the woman knows her, and tells me to start, assuring me that I can record with my phone. The next 30 minutes are spent asking questions, often interrupted by some neighbors that are curious, the translator's son crying or playing with a notebook and pen, and sometimes by vendors passing by on their bike to sell telele, also known as okra. I ask the usual questions about their life and health, when the woman suddenly says to my translator, "Ask her to please bring us another hospital nearby, the one we have is quite far." I am perplexed when Madalitsa translates the request and answer, "I don't work at the hospital. Does she think I work there?" Madalitsa says yes and laughs. I feel helpless that I cannot communicate better and clarify that I cannot give them anything, even though Madalitsa introduced me as a student from Switzerland. It seems that my white skin overpowers what is actually said about me and creates the image of a white person coming to help and build hospitals and other things. It reminds me of the encounter in the first village where a woman came up to my translator, worried because she does not have any children and I only talk to people with children. She thought that the people I conducted interviews with might receive something, a fact I struggled with throughout my time in the villages. Proximity sensors in the village, measuring social interactions. Ruth proudly shows me her proximity sensor that she and her 2 daughters had gotten from the data enumerators during the afternoon. It is a round black box, it has Utseta engraved on the back and is attached to her cloth with a pin. The string attached to her sensor is pink, a way for her to recognize which of the 3 sensors is hers, as she has to store them in a box provided by the study during the night. Faye and Layla, aged 5 and 6, are also wearing the sensors, blue string for the older one and yellow for the younger girl. They are all excited about wearing it. The children play around with it for a bit, but after a while they forget that they have the sensors attached to their clothes. Towards the evening, Faye starts to fiddle with the sensor and tries to take it off. She's whiny and tired and does not want to wear it anymore, so her aunt takes it off and gives it to her mother. The next day, all 3 are wearing them throughout the morning and early afternoon. But when the time comes for the children to go to their Arabic lessons in the mosque, Faye takes off her sensor and gives it to her aunt, Alinafe, who she usually lives with, before running off. Alinafe then puts it on her own clothes so that it does not get lost. She finds the whole situation funny and gestures towards the sensors to draw my attention to it while laughing. She didn't wear the sensor for the rest of the afternoon, even after Faye came back, until Ruth came to collect it in the evening.